Welcome to episode number 15. It's not a short-term diet, it's a long-term lifestyle change.
Welcome to the Innovateology podcast, where it is all about unleashing the creative side to find those brilliant, disruptive ideas to validate and build innovative solutions to solve life's problems.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Innovateology. I'm your host, Mary Michael, and I'm also joined by Linda and Melissa. Today, we'll be talking about pre-diabetes and some great low-carb snack recipes. So we're going to be following a story from one of our hosts, Melissa, and her story is about how she got diagnosed with pre-diabetes and what she did about it. So some questions that we hope to answer are, What does it mean to get diagnosed with prediabetes, and what can you do about it? What are some of the items a person with prediabetes can eat? And what are some great low-carb snack recipes? So just a disclaimer, please note that this blog and podcast are not designed and does not provide any medical advice whatsoever or professional diagnosis, opinion, treatment, or services to you or any other individual. We're just talking about Melissa's story and her opinion and how she solved her problem. So with that, let's get right into this episode.
So what is prediabetes and how many people have it? Well, having prediabetes means your blood glucose or sugar levels are higher than normal, but not high enough to be diagnosed as diabetes. It can be called early diabetes. 86 million Americans now have prediabetes, and it affects more than 38% of U.S. adults. That's one out of three adults. And of those 86 million, 9 out of 10 of them don't even know they have it. Not all people with prediabetes will develop diabetes, but the majority will. In fact, up to 70% of those with prediabetes may acquire the diabetes over their lifetime. And almost 10% of America has diabetes when you then add the almost 40% of prediabetic together. So that equals 50% or one out of every two Americans. So listen up, it could be you. Having too much glucose in the bloodstream can cause damage to your blood vessels and organs. Diabetes causes accelerated aging of the blood vessels and artery plaque. Complications include nerve damage, kidney disease, blindness, heart disease, stroke, hearing loss, and eye diseases like cataracts and glaucoma. If you have prediabetes, join a CDC-recognized lifestyle change program. It can help you lose weight, become more active, and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn more about diabetes prevention program, you can visit the research-based prevention program, and we'll have that website on our blog post. We'll actually have it posted on innovateology.com. So with that, Melissa, you have your own prediabetes experience, and so why don't you tell us about your journey with getting diagnosed?
Yes, thanks, Linda. This is my personal story about being diagnosed with prediabetes, and everyone may have a different route than I did. But for years, I had some symptoms that correlated with diabetes, but I just never attributed because I had a thyroid diagnosis called Hashimoto's, which both my sister and mom had. So I just assumed that the symptoms that I had were connected to my thyroid. Some of the symptoms that I had initially were increased thirst, frequent urination, fatigue after eating, and getting the shakes and feeling not good if I didn't eat right away. I also had carpal tunnel in both hands, and I had some tingling in my feet. So I was seeing a specialist for my thyroid who performed an A1C blood test, and it came out high. And I was totally in shock as my fasting glucose, you know, your fasting that you take in the morning without eating, was always normal and continues to be normal and was normal my whole life. So the difference is that this blood test you can get from your doctor, which is called an A1C, measures your average glucose over 3 month period. So it's looking at not only your fasting, but your highs and your lows. So, you know, based on my A1C blood test, I was told I was pre-diabetic and to cut back on my sugar and my carbohydrates. I have to admit that I did ignore the diagnosis for 6 months after my doctor told me, because I kept saying, why me? Why me? You know, I was pretty healthy. I'm normal weight. I'm even on the thin side. I walk up to 6 miles a day. I have great blood pressure. I have good cholesterol numbers. I don't eat a lot of sweets, and I only ate whole grain carbs. So, you know, I kept coming like, why me? Why me? So being a very analytical person in my personality, I researched as much as I could on the disease, my symptoms, and the complications. And I don't want to be a downer here, but, you know, Linda went through the complications and they are very serious. And this like really woke me up. I was like, I don't want to have any of those. So all my reading led to the idea that I had to get my own glucose monitor and check it out for myself. So I went to my doctor's office and the nurse gave me a free sample kit, and I started to test my blood glucose after meals. And then I was in for quite another shock. Just a bowl or two of whole grain cereal put my glucose level up to 200 micrograms per deciliter, which is not good. It's basically diabetes. So from what I've read, basically you want to keep your blood sugar level at 135 micrograms per deciliter so that you don't get any complications. So if you have frequent or high after meal glucose readings, like over 200, they do contribute to the progression of cardiovascular disease and all the other complications.
Wow, that's really fascinating. So what did you do about your pre-diabetes diagnosis?
I researched as much as I could on what your level should be at, what foods to eat, how many carbohydrates I should eat per meal. You know, and what I found basically was that carbohydrates raise your glucose level the highest. So, and you just don't want to look like how many carbohydrates you have per day, but how many carbs per meal. So that makes a big difference too. So next in the macro nutrients is protein. So protein, like chicken or whatever, does raise your glucose numbers, but it doesn't raise as much as carbohydrates, and it's a lot slower over time than carbohydrates. And then there's fats. And the great thing is fats do not raise your glucose at all. So basically, I used my blood sugar monitor and I started testing out different food combinations or meals that were lower in carb. I think, you know, what I had a big light over my head that I didn't realize before I was diagnosed was that you can eat organic whole grain bread and cereal, which, you know, is stated on TV, which is great for you, but it can raise your blood sugar as much as eating chocolate cake. And that concept to me, you know, I just never heard of, you know, and what I thought before, which was wrong, was that if you're eating whole grain, then that was healthy. Well, it's not healthy for everyone. And it's not healthy for a diabetic, and too much can be a bad thing. And for even me, just a half a cup of oatmeal can raise my blood sugar too high. So, you know, take something else that is supposedly healthy, an apple. Well, a big apple is 25 to 35 grams of carbohydrates. So to put that in perspective, 4 grams of carbohydrates equals 1 teaspoon of sugar. So when you eat an apple, you're eating about 6 to 8 teaspoons of sugar in a big apple. And I think, you know, what's changed so much compared to 100 years ago, which your great-grandfather had, was that the species of apples have changed so much. There's bred for being larger and larger and contain more and more sugar than the kind of tree, you know, apples your great-grandparents ate off the backyard. So with all that, I said, I know I got to eat low carb. So I devised some breakfast that wouldn't raise my glucose more than 10 points. An example that worked was 2 scrambled eggs with cream cheese and a quarter piece of whole grain, double fiber bread with some coconut oil spread and cinnamon. And so, you know, that was great. You know, I can eat that every morning and not have high sugar. But what didn't work was like 2 pancakes with eggs and a small glass of orange juice raised my blood sugar up 90 points. So that's out. So I devised these breakfasts, lunch, dinner, and meal plans. And for each, I figure out the foods and the number of carb meals per meal. And then I would test my glucose numbers, and I found out, you know, I can eat low carb vegetables, basically with some eggs, meats, fish, and dairy fat.
So, Melissa, then that is all really fascinating. And it's interesting to hear even how you kind of, you know, tested your way through all this. So can you tell us more about what you do eat?
Yeah, so now I only eat meals with a limit of 15 carb grams per meal. And I do exclude the vegetables because, you know, vegetables have very, very high carbs. So to find out how many carbs per gram in your meals, you just go to an app or Google. You get their apps like MyFitnessPal.com, or Lose It. They actually will give you your total carbs for your whole meal. So the motto is eat to your meter. So you definitely, if you're pre-diabetic, get out there and get a glucose meter. So then you're listening to your own body. So the other thing that I did was I increased my green vegetables to 8 cups a day, whether in salads or in shakes, because they have high nutrients, and they're the lower carb vegetables, along with a lot of fiber, which is key. So I'm talking about kale, spinach, watercress, cucumbers, romaine lettuce, green squash, cabbage, Brussels sprouts, broccoli, cauliflower, mushrooms, and then adding spices. Actually, you know, what I really learned was spices have a lot of antioxidants, which are good for you. So cinnamon, parsley, oregano, rosemary, thyme, sage, basil. So, and then I eat some eggs, meat, and small fish like sardines every day. And I cook with avocado oil because it is the best oil that can stand up the highest heat when cooking. And in no heat situations, for salads, I use olive oil, coconut oil, or grass-fed butter.
So please tell us some more about, it's interesting to kind of think about, you know, the daily routine and the food combinations in some new ways. So what else can you share with us?
Yeah, so I eat, now on nuts and seeds, I eat chia seeds, hemp seeds, flax seeds, sunflower seeds, and pumpkin seeds. And some good nuts are walnuts, almonds, pecans, macadamia, and hazelnuts. Now on fruit, you really have to limit your fruit, just like I went back with the story with the apple. I mean, fruit isn't what it used to be, and like grapes are just sugar bombs in a way to a diabetic. So I only eat berries, so strawberries, blueberries, you know, and I do eat lemon and grapefruit, black olives, and avocados. So what I did learn from my endocrinologist is when you eat fruit, you should eat it after the meal, because once you eat a protein and a fat together, those two actually blunt if you eat the carbohydrate so that your sugar won't go as high as if you ate the carb first and then had your fat and protein. So the order of which you eat does make a difference. And this is the bad part, I guess, but, you know, what people get upset about is, you know, I just stopped eating all high carb foods, even whole grain, even organic whole grain. So I'm talking crackers, bread, cakes, cookies, popcorn, pies, cereal, pancakes, waffles, pasta, rice, and potatoes.
Oh, all the good stuff.
Yeah. Like, and, you know, so now I there's three things I allow myself, which is Wasa 7-grain light crackers, because one big cracker is only 5 carbs. I eat all brand high fiber cereal, and I'll only eat, you know, like a quarter to a half a cup, but it has so much fiber that it kind of helps, you know, break down the carbs, so your sugars don't go as high. And then, like I said, this Nature's Own double fiber wheat bread is great, because they put in double amount of fiber, so again, your sugars won't go high. And then in baking, you have to just forget total flour. That's gone. That's out. Okay, so use almond flour and coconut flour. And for sugar, I use stevia, basically, and Truvia, which Truvia is stevia extract along with another sugar. So then you're saying, well, what do you have for dessert? You know, well, so for dessert, you know, I'll have some like Greek yogurt, full fat, and I'll put in some stevia with some seeds, or I'll have, you know, something with cheese, or I actually drink a lot of coconut milk, which is full fat from the can, and it's so yummy and it gives you so much energy. So, you know, from that list of foods, you know, I started looking at what can I make myself. So I bake my own almond and coconut flour crispy crackers. And I've also learned how to make this chocolate avocado pudding. And yesterday I made some cheese pancakes, which is mostly made with cream cheese. So you can find these recipes on our website, innovateology.com.
Well, Melissa, this sounds like it really took a lot of discipline for you to make this transition. And I'm wondering, you know, I mean, you shared something about, you know, just the numbers and your research that motivated you, but could you tell us a little bit more? Because you must have had some really strong motivation to make the change.
Yeah, I think the biggest motivation was getting your own glucose meter, because when you see your sugar go up to 200 and you know that can do damage to your body, deep inside of me, I said, I got to change, you know, period. I am not going to eat anything that raises my sugar too high. Having too much glucose in your bloodstream can cause damage that I don't want. So I just decided that this was for the long term and it's not a quick fix. So those high glucose readings, it's like flipping a switch in your brain and pulling an emotional trigger for me inside that I'm going to do this. I mean, even, you know, I went over to my brother's house a couple weeks ago and they had ice cream and apple pie. And, you know, it's been so long now that I've changed my diet that it really, I didn't even want it. It's amazing once you get into the groove. So this is the new me, and this is my secret, is that you have to change your mindset and just go for it.
Well, that's really fabulous that you were able to make that switch, and really that you're kind of encouraged, or you found some tasty enough meals and ways to prepare foods. It sounds like that it's been, you found new ways to appreciate food. So could you suggest some low carb snacks?
Yeah, so I'll go through some low carb snacks and desserts I make now, but obviously you'd have to go on the website to get the recipe. So these are lower in carb but higher in fat that won't raise your sugar. And again, you know, you should test, and you should also talk to your doctor what you can and can't eat. You know, your doctor is key. So let's go through chocolate. You know, I still love chocolate. So I have this thing called a chocolate energy smoothie, and I swear that for 3 hours, I'm like a little bunny. You know, that's if I have to get something done, I eat this. So like I said before, it's this half a cup or even a cup of canned coconut milk, which has a lot of fat in it. And either add some cold water or almond milk, some chocolate powder, but unsweetened. I put in some blueberries or cranberries or anything for my antioxidants. And then I add whey protein that has made from stevia, and then some dash of vanilla extract and an eighth of a banana to give it that thickness, and then a pinch of salt, because whenever you add salt to chocolate, it ups the chocolate taste. I found that out from a baking book. But so you mix the whole thing in a high-speed blender, and it's a great drink. The other chocolate thing that I really love is, so I buy in the grocery store, you can find, it's called 90% cocoa bar. And Linton makes it, and it's it'll have a big 90% on it, chocolate bar. And so I take that with a teaspoon of vanilla, 3 teaspoons of butter, and 2 tablespoons of cream. And I mix that in over the stove or a double broiler, and heat it up right before all the chocolate melts. And then I just throw in seeds like pumpkin seeds, sunflower seeds, almonds, whatever you got around, pecans, whatever you like. And then you mix in the sugar too, like 2 packets of stevia. And then you throw it in the freezer, and it's so good. It's like your own chocolate treat that isn't going to affect your blood sugar.
Well, these sound fantastic. I now am all set to try them myself. So that makes the sacrifices not so stiff. How about a couple of other suggestions?
So crackers, this is a harder one because you miss the crunch, so you can make crackers out of half a cup of almond flour, half a cup of coconut flour, and then I use a small amount of arrowroot flour, which is kind of like a cornstarch. Now that does have some carbs, but not many. And then I use a cup of shredded cheese or taco shredded cheese, and then I put all these seasonings in, whatever. If you want to go sweet, you could do cinnamon, vanilla, or chocolate. If you want to go savory, you can go taco powder, sage, or thyme. And then a little bit of baking powder, and then enough cold water. And then you just mix it all up. You leave it in the fridge for 30 minutes. And then you take a little spoonful, and then you put them on a parchment paper, and you bake them. But the secret is you have to flatten them as flat as they possibly can be, because if they're not flat, they're not going to be crispy. So the other thing that I make is cheese pancakes. So this basically only has, again, almond and coconut flour. So it's doesn't have regular flour. So it's 1 egg, 2 tablespoons of cottage cheese, 2 tablespoons of cream cheese, some butter, teaspoon of butter, 2 dashes of vanilla extract, some cinnamon, some almond flour, coconut flour, and then some either baking soda or arrowroot starch. And then you just mix them up and put it on a very hot, hot pan that's been oiled.
Well, they sound delicious too. So a couple of other recipes I'll definitely have to try. So could you share what's your action plan?
Yeah, so if you're either, you know, you have to know whether or not you have prediabetes. Like Linda said in the beginning, you know, 1 out of 2 people either have prediabetes or not diabetes. So don't do what I did and not know. And so, and once I got my A1C blood test, I knew. So you need to ask your doctor to get that. Do not be satisfied if your doctor says, oh, your fasting glucose is fine. Because half of the people who have a normal fasting glucose have abnormal when they eat something. So it could be you. So if you get your A1C test and you are diagnosed with prediabetes, make sure you get a glucose meter so you can measure your levels, because each person is different and you can figure out, okay, what can I eat? What can I eat? Right? So write down how many grams of carbohydrates in all those meals, and then make a chart up and then test them with your blood glucose monitor. And then, so big picture, you just got to change your mindset and say about food and exercise and what's good for your body. So, you know, you want to eat what's good for your body for your future. So you want to eat a lot of low-carb vegetables, exercise, strength training, take as many steps as you can per day, walk 10 minutes after each meal, and you can do it. You can do it.
All right. I'm eager to get my meter. And I guess, could you share with everyone where they could get a copy of the low-carb snack recipes you shared?
Sure. So on the website, innovateology.com, you can find the copy of all these snack recipes we just went through. And we also have a link, if you don't know what an A1C test is, what it's about, and so you can discuss it with your doctor there. But I just want to also say, you know, you have to listen to your healthcare provider, that, you know, this blog and podcast does not provide medical advice, professional diagnoses, opinions, treatments, or services to you or anyone. The information provided in this site through linkages to other sites is not a substitute for medical or professional care, and you should not use this information in place of a visit to a doctor or, you know, your advice of another healthcare provider.
All good points, and actually important to mention on the podcast. It's always important to talk with your healthcare provider for sure. Well, Melissa, thanks so much for sharing your personal journey through the pre-diabetes landscape. Lots of helpful information, and we hope that this is information that our listeners will take advantage of and pursue for themselves and their good health.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks for listening to the Innovateology Podcast. We hope we have generated some disruptive ideas and helped unleash that creative side. Please help us keep innovating and leave us a comment or a review on our website. Till next time, don't stop innovating.